Thank you, Chip, for leading all the each week, playing that music. Yesterday morning, as Jennifer and I were preparing to come home, we were in Miami, and it was 85 degrees. I had a t-shirt on and some shorts and tennis shoes. I got onto the plane. I got off the plane in Atlanta. It was 42 degrees when we got off. I wanted to go back to Miami, and as we just saw that video, these Atlantans who moved to Miami felt the call of God to go to Miami. I don't think that was a hard call. I'm thinking maybe I should go join them. No. I just hope I'm bringing actually sunshine back with me from my vacation. That's what we need. It was a great week. Well, today I want to start a new series. And typically we go verse by verse through a book. And typically I alternate between Old Testament and New Testament. I'm going to do a little differently for the next several weeks on more of a thematic thing, but looking at verses in the Scripture that deal with strength. Every one of us have moments of weakness. Sometimes it's moments of weakness when temptation comes. Sometimes it's moments of weakness when just crisis happens in our lives and we're not sure what to do. We lack wisdom. We lack direction. Sometimes things are just so overwhelming. And you say, I just can't go any further. Whether it's relational crisis, whether it's financial, you know, troubles, health issues or diagnosis that have taken place. And so this series is called Find Your Strength in God. Obviously, all of us could say, oh, yeah, I find my strength in God. But have you had moments in your life that even God seems at a distance and you seem so weak? Maybe so weak you don't even know what to pray, how to pray, or even be able to pray. We talked about that earlier this year, just in our own prayer lives. I'm thankful that the Holy Spirit is a gift to us, not only to reside in us, but to pray on our behalf when we don't know what to say or what to do. God is giving us what we are unable to do, and that's the beauty of God. God doesn't say, meet me halfway. He says, I see in your weakness, you need me to come all the way to you. And I'll give you everything you need. Just trust me. Just open up your heart and life and just invite me in to do all that you need. Boy, there's many occasions I could go through in my life just thinking about strength and the times I've needed it, or the times I could testify where God gave me extraordinary strength. I just out of the blue, it just seemed like what I didn't think I had, all of a sudden I had the words to say, I had the wisdom, I had the confidence, the courage, I had all the strength, and I'm like, wow, yesterday I was lacking, but today I've got more than enough. It's overflowing in the strength. Oh, praise be to God, because he provided that. You know, in those times that come, and there are some things in life you just can't prepare for. It doesn't matter how many books you read, how many biographies you've encountered, you know, other people's lives, how many testimonies you've heard. You're not prepared until it happens. And then all of a sudden, wow, and God gives you everything you need at that moment. He didn't have to give it to you beforehand, even though I know most of us are planners, preparers. We'd like to be prepared before we enter a situation. It's kind of like saying, I want to be prepared before I have a baby. You have no idea if you read a book on having a baby. You have no idea what it's going to be like. Would you agree? Because your baby didn't read that book, you know. They don't know, so they come up with their own rules. I mean, that's just kind of how it happens. And with so much of life, I don't care. You get a college degree and you get that first job. You think, I know what I'm doing. And then you find out, maybe I don't. You know, there's so much you can't truly prepare for. You can only prepare your heart and your dependence upon the Lord. So we're going to look at several strength passages throughout the next several weeks. Today I want to start with just a thought of someone who found their courage and hope in a verse of strength. His name was Stephen Grover Cleveland. Anybody ever heard of him? He was president of the United States back in the 1800s. He is the only president, I believe, that served two terms but non-consecutive. He won an election, won the popular vote in the second term, but he did not win the Electoral College, so he lost. Came back and ran a third time, and he won, so he was our 22nd and 24th presidents. Pretty amazing. He's the president who was able to dedicate the Statue of Liberty. He was the second president to actually get married while in the White House. But he was the first one to get married to his first wife in the White House. James Taylor had gotten married to his second wife while he was in the White House, but during the first term of Grover Cleveland, he married his first wife. He was 49 years old, and she was 21. Boy, you talk about scandal in the news. That made her the youngest first lady in all of history. Interesting. He had some incredible success in his first term, obviously very popular, though he didn't win the second term. Came in his second term, but third time of running for president, and the financial crisis that hit America was so great. He did not know how to get us out of it. It lasted beyond his years. Also during that time, he had his own health crisis. He was diagnosed with a type of cancer. But in that day, he, just like today, perhaps, we don't always know what goes on in Washington. He didn't want the country to know. You know, with the depression that was happening during his days, the last thing that the country needed was to hear that their president was ailing and may die. He had surgery, top secret surgery, on a friend's yacht away where nobody could even be there. And, you know, the paparazzi wasn't running around. You know, TMZ wasn't right there on the boat. So he had surgery. Obviously, he survived. But, I mean, it was difficult days for Grover Cleveland, for the country. Historians have praised him for his integrity, for his courage, for his common sense in a lot of areas, and his hard work. He actually often worked past midnight because he so desperately wanted to do whatever it took to have the country succeed. His dying words summed up his life, I believe. He said, "I have tried so hard to do right." One of the most interesting things about Grover Cleveland is where he found his strength. He had grown up in a Bible-believing home. His father was a Presbyterian minister. Doesn't mean every minister's kid knows the entire Bible, but certainly he had some influence there, and he knew various verses and read them faithfully. One of the verses that was important to him, it was so important to him that he had the verse framed and hung directly over his bed. He kept it with him. He put it in the White House while he was there, kept it with him later, over his bed. So it was the first thing he saw every morning, or the last thing he saw every evening. And it was Deuteronomy chapter 33, the end of verse 25. You see it up on the screen. And as your days, and I'm actually reading in the English Standard Version. He was reading that in the King James, an older version of the King James. And as your days, so shall your strength be. Basically, you will be given enough strength that you need until your days are done. For whatever crisis you go through, for whatever challenge that you have, for whatever insurmountable pressures you go under, the strength that you need will match the amount of days that you have. That's an incredibly encouraging verse. When he was asked about it, he responded, "If I have any coat of arms, any emblem, it is that." He knew his strength would be sufficient to make it through any challenges, any difficulties. If you don't have a Bible with you, I encourage you to turn to page 177, where you'll find this verse. For the rest of you, certainly find Deuteronomy 33, verse 25. In the Christian Standard, Holman Christian Standard Bible, I guess it's now just the Christian Standard Bible, it says it this way. It says, "And your strength lasts as long as you live." I like the phrasing of that. What a promise to live by. What a promise to remember and be encouraged by. You know, the same biblical principle influenced John Rippon, the writer of the hymn, "How Firm a Foundation." "How Firm a Foundation" has many verses. In our particular hymn book, it only has four, and it removed the verse that I'm going to reference. The real verse 2 in "How Firm a Foundation" says this, "In every condition, in sickness and in health, in poverty's veil or abounding in wealth, at home and abroad, on land and on the sea, as thy days may demand, shall thy strength ever be. Goes on to verse 3, which is our verse 2 in our hymn book. Fear not, I am with thee. O, be not dismayed, for I am thy God and will still give thee aid. I'll strengthen thee, help thee, and cause thee to stand, upheld by my righteous, omnipotent hand. The strength that God provides is something not only a president needs, but us in our world that we have to interact with our family, our neighbors, our workplace, whatever that we're having. Don't underestimate the importance of God's strength even in your world, though you're not the commander-in-chief of our country or over the entire world. God cares about the little things as much as he cares about the major. He cares just as much about you as he does any other person on the planet. Your strength is available at the mere requesting it of God. Anybody today need strength? Anybody need just something that, oh, you know, you just don't have it, but God can give it to you and you'll be able to overcome? Today I want us to consider that verse of strength of Deuteronomy chapter 33. Verse 25. This verse, if you look in its context in chapter 33, this verse was given to the descendants of a man named Asher. You'll see that in the text. Let me go back over here to, you see in verse 24, and of Asher he said, Asher was a son of Jacob who had 12 sons, and these are his descendants that are hearing this verse. So I want to go back to the beginnings of this man named Asher to find out a little bit about him and how it came to be that this strength verse was given to him and not the other tribes. Back in Genesis chapter 30, we're going to see where Asher was born and that he was born happy. So if you've got a Bible, you can flip back to Genesis chapter 30. We learn about Jacob and his 12 sons. These would then therefore be the great-grandsons of Abraham. Important. These boys became the 12 tribes of Israel. Asher was number 8. Is Thaddeus here? Number 8 is a good number. The 8th of 12. We see the details of his birth down in verse 12 and 13. Leah's servant Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. And Leah said, "Happy am I, for women have called me happy," so she called his name Asher. I actually have an Asher that lives in my home now. If you recall, about a year ago, I was in Kenya with my daughter and a team of people ministering, and I come back to find there was a new resident in my home. No, Jennifer did not have another child, but there was a cat in my home. It's been a year. I'm kind of getting over that. But there was a cat in my home. Now, how many of you are cat lovers? Yeah, I like to single you out. I want to know who you are. I like dogs, cats. Well, I shouldn't go too far. We have a cat in our home. And that cat's name is Asher. All right, so Asher is born, and this mother is super happy about this. Asher's name in Hebrew literally means happy. Asher is not being named happy just because he may be happy. Asher was named happy because he made others happy. He brought a happiness, a joy to the mother and all those around. This is the beginning of Asher's life. Yeah, it's interesting how he came about and how all Abraham had all of these, or Jacob had all these children, but he was happy. It's the first time the word happy is used in the Old Testament. It's important. God is happy about this. There's a relationship here that God is fulfilling in his purposes. And this boy named Asher, this cat in our home named Asher, brings others happiness. That's a great characteristic, by the way. Maybe we could all be a little more Asher-like. That it's not just about our own happiness, but we ought to think about the lives of others. And how can we live in such a way that brings happiness to the people around us? That we're not the draining type of people, but we're the ones that are overflowing, wanting to give and share joy with others. To lift someone up who is struggling. To just be the face in the room that brightens up the place when we're not sure how to feel about something. That strength can come through joy, right? I'm going to talk about that next week. We're going to go to Nehemiah, who the joy of the Lord is your strength. And that's where Asher's starting. Just his presence brought joy and happiness to his mother and to other people. Though the Bible says very little about the man Asher, in a classical Jewish rabbinical literature, he is described as a wise man who did his best to maintain harmony among his brothers and his family. So we'll go from this happiness down to later in life in Genesis chapter 49, where he is blessed greatly. Turn to Genesis chapter 49. Certainly the chapter right before the end of Genesis, is there's only 50 chapters in Genesis. In Genesis chapter 49, we find Asher and his brothers around their father who is preparing to die. Joseph had already been sold into slavery, and there's a whole story within that and Asher's involvement in that. But here, his father is on his deathbed, preparing to die, and Jacob, following Jewish custom, before he dies, he's going to go to each of the sons and give them a blessing, a prayer, if you will, a hope for their life. Each son receives something unique in their blessing. And when it came to Asher's time, you'll see this down in verse 20, of chapter 49, it says, "And Asher's food shall be rich, and he shall yield royal delicacies." What a blessing as the dying father looks into the eyes of his son and said, "My blessing to you, my prayer for you, my hope for you is that you will have more than enough. You will be provided for. You will be protected. You will be not only one who gets to enjoy, but you'll be providing for others the goodness of the soil." Asher and his descendants were blessed with the ability to produce great crops. The land that they would inherit years later would provide great food for people and raise ample money by exporting all of the food. He was blessed greatly, so he was born happy, giving others happiness. He was blessed greatly and being provided land years later where he would be producing such a crop that not only would his people and his descendants enjoy it, but it would be the export beauty of the world. I want you to go back to now Deuteronomy chapter 33, back to the context of where we began. Deuteronomy 33 is where we see that promised strength. After Jacob died, the brothers and the descendants multiplied to become a great nation, even though they were now slaves in Egypt. And God had to raise up Moses to rescue the people out of Egypt. By this time, Asher certainly is dead, but he had many descendants. Actually, at various times in the book of Numbers, you'll see at one time there was 41,500 people in the tribe of Asher. These young men, not the largest or the smallest of the 12 tribes. But a generation later, they had a tribe that had grown to 53,400, according to Numbers chapter 26, verse 47. But in Deuteronomy 33, we have a picture similar to what we see in Genesis chapter 49. In Genesis chapter 49, Jacob is dying and blessing the individual children. In Deuteronomy 33, Moses is dying. He's getting to the end of his life, a little different scenario of the death, but Moses is there, and now what is he doing? He's blessing each tribe before he goes. And so this is Moses' prayer, his hope, his blessing upon the tribe of Asher. He wanted to bless Asher in a great way. These blessings comprise Moses' last words. In Deuteronomy chapter 33, you can begin at verse 24. And as of Asher, he said, most blessed, which could also be translated happy. Most happy of all the tribes. Most joyful, most blessed of all of the people, of the sons of Asher. Let him be the favorite of his brothers, and let him dip his foot in oil. Even the descendants, years after Asher's death, his descendants took on his character, and they were, in some ways, the favorite, the most joyful. Why were they the favorites? Because they brought joy and happiness and produce to everyone else. They didn't think about themselves. They were there for others. And then the promise, the blessing, the prayer, let him dip his foot in oil. Interesting phrase. What's the meaning of that? Some scholars say it's petroleum. Years later, there would be major petroleum reserves in the land of where Asher's land would be.